And now, live from the heart of Waikiki on KGU, it's the Aloha Weekend Gourmet Show with host Charles Peck. Today, Charles talks about the good things in life. Food and restaurants, entertainment and theater, opera and symphony, dance and the movies. There are celebrity interviews and the sounds of Hawaii on location. Sit back, relax, and enjoy all the good things in life on KGU's Aloha Weekend Gourmet Show.
Hawaii, heart of a lost continent? Well, that's a good question. And we have somebody here who we're going to discuss that with, Keith Williams. Now, Keith is with the Waimea Arboretum, a botanical gardens. And he's also a horticulturist, naturally. And he's a specialist in rare Hawaiian plants. And that's how we come to talk about lost continent possibility, because these plants are found only here in Hawaii, nowhere else in the world. And how could they get here? That seems to be the premise. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the interesting thing is that we have these extremely rare plants in Hawaii, which, as you say, occur nowhere else in the world. And they've been developing for millions of years, and there must have been an ancestral form for these plants. And just how these ancestral forms got here has been a source of great controversy for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
I think the conventional, if you like, explanation has always been that seeds floated here in the ocean currents, and they blew here in the winds. And many of them were probably carried on the feet of birds who migrated to the islands or were blown off course. And there's no doubt that this is probably true to some extent, but we're talking thousands of miles. And the mind boggles a little bit to think of some poor bird blown off course with a seed in its stomach or a seed attached to its feet and actually not having released the seed before it got to the islands. The possibilities are millions to one against.
Well, land bridges seem to be the answer when you really think about it. There must have been land bridges. I don't think that everyone traveled as far as they think they did either. I think that the migrations were not as far. They did not take as long, nor were they perhaps as dangerous as we might think they were. I think they were closer. A lot of islands must have been out there somewhere, or atolls.
I think that's true. That the National Geographic a few years ago put out a wonderful map of the Pacific seafloor, which shows literally thousands of islands scattered throughout the Pacific, most of which are under the water. And if we go back millions of years to a time when the islands of the Pacific probably didn't exist in the form we know them, and the Hawaiian Islands didn't exist at all, and countries like New Zealand and Australia and perhaps Indochina and China itself as we know it wasn't in the position on the globe that it is now.
Now we know that that the Antarctica had been at one time part of the Australian continent, isn't that true?
That's what I understand,
That's what they found out, actually.
Yes.
I mean, that's actual fact.
Yes.
So it's possible.
I think this is very true. Dr. Ronald Melville, who was a plant geographer and a student of evolution, put forward a theory about 20 years ago, which he tried to prove really against all odds until his death a couple of years ago. thought that there were three tectonic plates, and these tectonic plates are supposedly floating around and support the oceans and the land masses. What his theory was that three of these plates met somewhere in the vicinity of the center of present-day Pacific Ocean, and that a great ridge pushed up at the point of junction of these three plates. Mm-hmm. And as this ridge came up, volcanic ridge, the plates moved away in opposite directions. And we tend to think that tectonic plates float around slowly in their own time and over very, very tiny spaces over hundreds of thousands of millions of years. His theory is that this wasn't quite the case, and that these plates, when pushed in the way that these were pushed, each plate broke up and fractured and went in different directions. So you have three plates going off in three different directions, and each plate fracturing and breaking up and going off in different directions within its own major direction. Mm-hmm. And if that theory is right, and it still has yet to be proved, then this would explain land bridges, because there would have been islands which have now long since gone under the ocean, but which would have formed bridges which birds and wind and so on, even to some extent seeds floating, although very few actually can survive salt water. But they could have got to other islands and island hopped, and then over a period of time the islands that they hopped from disappeared. Eventually there would be the possibility that seeds could in one form or another have reached the emerging Hawaiian Islands, because Kauai was the first of the major islands that we know of to have emerged. But there are 1,000 miles of islands in the Hawaiian chain, which people tend to forget, spreading really from Midway right the way down to the Big Island, and then a new island that's forming off the Big Island.
Oh, yes, isn't that an interesting...
Very fascinating.
That's something we can watch. Now, it could take a long time, and then again, it could happen overnight if there's a big enough... a volcanic eruption, you'd have an island in no time at all, wouldn't you?
I see no reason why not. This this seems to be the way things happen. We can speculate that at present time span, the island could stay underwater for perhaps millions of years. But it's quite true that a volcanic eruption could occur any time and a new island would have come above the water.
And the interesting thing, there's life down there. That deep, plus the water, which is, I guess, very, very hot, wouldn't you say? There's still life of some kind down there, worms and all sorts of insects and things.
Apparently, there is a fascinating sea flora and fauna, I should say, down there, flora as well, if we take flora to be seaweeds and algae. People don't tend to think of plants growing in the ocean, but after all, that's what seaweeds are.
Of course, so, all kinds of plants, and even coral is alive.
It's alive. It's
people don't really realize. It's a fascinating subject, and I wonder sometimes about adaptation, how quickly insects, fish, and other... shall we say, animals and mammals develop and adapt. We seem to have stopped adapting, or if we haven't, we're not aware that we are. But there's this great adaptation with plants. They just survive. They know how, they're survivors, aren't they?
That's basically what it is. And in the case of the Hawaiian Islands, we have to forget the Hawaiian Islands as they exist today. We have to think back to time when there wasn't any vegetation. And there weren't any birds, and of course we never had any mammals to speak of. We've never had a decent mammal fauna in the Hawaiian Islands, which is rather sad. I sort of miss squirrels and otters and things like that.
Well, we don't want to bring them in.
We got enough problems as it is.
With mongoose and what else.
That's right, yeah.
And snails, they brought in, I don't know if you're interested in snails, you must be because you're interested in plants, but they did bring in snails that caused a lot of trouble here, didn't they?
Yes, they brought in... African snails, which have been really devastating. And I understand that in the pre-war days, African snails were very common in the islands here. And they brought in a parasitic snail, so a snail to eat the snails. Unfortunately, what that did was eliminate most of our truly Hawaiian snails, the tree snails, and there were hundreds and hundreds of variants of little tiny, highly colored snails that lived on the plants, and the parasitic snail just came over here and just had a feast.
Oh,
I just eliminated them.
Well, we'll be back with some more of our gourmet snails here and with our wonderful plants. Keith Williams, we'll be right back after this break.
Do Ginny Mae's make sense now? A recent article in the Wall Street Journal suggests that bond strategists think they've spotted a hot new investment angle on tax reform. And this is just one example of the Journal's continuing coverage of the new tax bill. If business and financial news is important to you, have a pencil ready for a timely offer from the Journal. Other recent Journal articles revealed how, despite signs to the contrary, a comeback by the old-style family isn't likely. And how Japanese automakers are fighting against increasing competition in the U.S. in a stagnant market at home. Start to benefit from information like this by taking advantage of the Journal's special introductory offer.
13 weeks for just $45.25. That's only $45.25 for 13 weeks of the Journal, delivered to your home or office every business day. To order, call toll-free 800-852-5555. That's 800-852-5555. You'll be billed later. The Wall Street Journal, the daily diary of the American dream.
Hello, I'm Bill Haber, and I invented EasyQuit, a marvelous safe system now helping smokers worldwide to kick the habit, some in only 1 week. My promise, it must help you cut down or quit smoking or money back. My system includes a handsome U.S. patented cigarette substitute. It has a unique menthol-flavored capsule with no drugs, no nicotine, and you never light it. Want to smoke? Reach for an Easy Quit instead. Just inhale, and the soothing sensation helps ease you over each cigarette crisis. It really works. One capsule lasts up to 60 days. You get the system plus three refills. Many say that Easy Quit is better than gums, nicotine prescriptions, or even expensive clinics. And this safe, amazing system is only $10, including postage and handling. Quit smoking or money back.
For the amazing Easy Quit kit, send $10 to Easy Quit in care of KGU Radio, 2255 Kuhio Avenue, Suite 1201, Honolulu, 96815. Easy Quit, the easy way to quit smoking.
This is Charles Beck, back with you again on KGU's Aloha Weekend Gourmet Show. I don't think because we're talking about snails, we're talking about the edible ones. We're not. You can't eat those snails. You have to raise them special, don't you?
I think so, yeah.
I don't think anybody would eat just...
I wouldn't either.
No, they're all especially grown in France and all over the world. But anyway, Keith is with the Waimea Arboretum. He's the director there and the botanical gardens. I have not been there, but I passed by so many times and wanted to drop in. But it had been on a weekend, Keith, and I thought to myself, you won't be there. But I will be coming in. I do want to see all these rare plants. Tell us about the endemic Hawaiian plants.
Well, Hawaii is very unique. Many people have said that if Darwin hadn't gone to the Galapagos Islands, if he'd come to the Hawaiian Islands, then the Hawaiian Islands would have the predominance in people's thoughts when they talk about evolution that Galapagos Islands have. Because we have birds and plants equally fascinating and unique as the Galapagos Islands. Unfortunately, in the same way that the Galapagos Islands flora and fauna are going, ours are going as well and extremely rapidly.
Mm-hmm. And it's bringing in foreign elements to the environment, bringing in something that perhaps would feed on these plants. Hmm?
Yes, I think the first thing that went wrong, if that's the correct term, is when the early migrating Polynesians came. They brought with them rats, probably inadvertently, and they brought with them pigs. And pigs, of course, are an important part of the diet. Pigs will go into the rainforest and they'll root in the tree fern forest and do an enormous amount of damage. Later on, the good old British decided that, as they had done elsewhere in the world and destroyed island ecosystems worldwide, that islands should have goats. And the reason for that, of course, was there would be goat meat for succeeding sailors.
And milk.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And then an American decided that the island should have cattle at a later date. And the king at that time put a kapu on the cattle. that nobody could kill them, and they went wild, and there were literally millions of feral cattle in the forest. The goats liked the exposed drylands, and the cattle liked the, particularly the dryland forest. They didn't go too much into the wetland, but of course, as they worked their way eating and destroying things in the on the edge of the wetlands, it became drier and drier as the trees went. And of course, you got the pigs in the deep rainforest. So between the three of them, they effectively destroyed enormous areas of forest, and with them, even good old snails and and plants.
And it's never come back.
It's never come back. No, it never will come back. No, it's not possible.
Well, what are these endemic plants?
Well, the
most interesting ones.
The Hawaiian Islands has about 1,500 kinds of plants. Which are not found anywhere else in the world at all. They're totally unique to the islands, stuck out here in the middle of the Pacific. Their ancestors have long since gone, and they have evolved into totally different species. They've occupied what they call niches, where there weren't any plants that could grow in these little particular areas. It may be just the head of one valley, it may be the bank of one river. And these endemic plants, as I say, are not found anywhere else in the world. They have, in some cases, the genus, which is one of the great divisions of the plants, the genus is not found anywhere else in the world, which is very, very unusual. And these species, because they occupied specialized niches, could not tolerate any change in those niches. So once the feral animals or man came in and destroyed those niches in some rather small way. It may be the cutting of a forest a few miles away, but that would destroy the microclimate, if you want to use that term, perhaps at the head of a valley in a way that we don't really understand, but sufficiently that the climate in that valley had changed and the plant died out. So there are probably in the vicinity of 30% to 40% of our true native Hawaiian plants, the plants that are found nowhere else in the world, which are now facing extinction.
And you have them there at the...
We have some.
You don't have not, all 15,000 of them.
No. We are part of a national network of 18 gardens, part of the Center for Plant Conservation, which started 2 years ago. It was an idea conceived by two botanists from Arnold Arboretum in Boston, a branch of the Harvard University. And they thought, well, why couldn't we bring into cultivation the United States' rarest plants, because we're never going to be able to protect them all in time. So they selected 18 gardens throughout the nation. And Waimea is proud to be one of those 18 gardens. And there are two gardens in the Hawaiian Islands who are charged with somehow or other bringing into cultivation our endangered plant species. This also includes Guam and American Samoa as well, so it's quite a challenge.
Well, besides plants, they are protecting the snail too, I understand now, trying to see that that doesn't become extinct. That would be terrible.
Well, I think this is true as well. Yeah, they're doing this by setting aside forest reserves. But unfortunately, a forest reserve is not a reserve as long as it's just a line on a map. There has to be active participation by our state authorities to take it a stage further and have active programs of conservation within those reserve areas. And unfortunately, this is not happening.
Well, I don't think people realize. They see a beautiful shell, and there's something walking under it, and they just pick it up and remove the creature and think that's a nice piece of jewelry. That's fine, except that you don't want to do that with a species that's becoming extinct.
That's right.
For sure.
That's right.
But how are you going to know, you know?
At one time, snail collecting apparently was a great fad in the island. Some old-timers have literally thousands and thousands of shells in private collections. And the fascinating thing about snails, getting back to our non-gourmet subject again, is that the snails often... A species of snail only lived on a particular species of endemic tree. So if the tree went, the snail went. And by the same token, some of our fabulous native birds, we have these rare endemic birds on parallel with the rare plants, and these birds would be pollinators for some of the rare plants. And very often the bird would only pollinate a certain plant. So if the bird went extinct, then there were no fertile seeds on the plants. And if the plant went extinct, then the bird had nothing to eat. And so it's not just the removal of one species, it affects so many species, far more than we realize.
Well, the booby bird on Kauai, for instance, when I first came here, it was 1965, on a visit, I went up to the lighthouse, and the birds were right there, right, you could touch them. They were, they were all nesting right there, right? With the, and then way across the way on the cliff. Now, they do not come up there. They stay way away on the cliff, and I'm not so sure there are as many. The last two times, I just hoped they would be there, but for some reason, they're not coming there anymore at that particular spot. Is it that there are less of them, or what's happening to the booby? Just an interesting bird.
It's a fascinating bird. I really don't know what the situation is with the birds. I have enough trouble with plant life.
But you're interested.
But I'm interested. You know, you can't really divorce yourself from the other aspects of Hawaiian wildlife. It may well be that the birds got smart and they're keeping away from human beings, having realized that they were harmful. It may well be, of course, that the bold ones became extinct. And the more cautious ones, who had this caution built into their genetic system, kept away from humans, and those are the ones in the cliffs now.
Well, tell us something about the arboretum, and when can we come and see all these wonderful plants you've got?
Well, Waimea Arboretum and Botanical Garden is a very unique garden. First of all, it's privately owned. Many people come out to Waimea Falls Park, where the garden is situated, and think that it's a state-owned project. Actually, it isn't. It's privately owned by four people. And they allow us to, I shouldn't say allow, they mandate us to make a world-class botanical garden with an emphasis on rare and endangered species. And this is rather unique. Even in the United States, where gardens of this type are not totally unknown, a garden on the scale of Waimea is privately owned is certainly quite a very rare thing, and I think is a great credit
and
to the state.
And it's open every day?
Open every day of the year.
Even Saturday and Sunday?
And even Christmas Day.
Oh, for goodness sake, you never take a rest.
Never.
Well, Keith, our time has run out. Would you believe that? And such a wonderful, wonderful interview. I really enjoyed hearing all this, especially about the island, too, being perhaps part of a lost continent. Thank you, and this is Charles Beck, and I'll see you, of course, tonight, KGU's Classic Radio Time, at 10 o'clock. Thank you so much for listening.